time the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago. Well, it's time for our weekly segment of Abandoned Manitoba. And following on the slightly darker theme of last week, this week we are talking about abandoned cemeteries. And Gordon Goldsborough joins us now from the Manitoba Historical Society to tell us more. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadja.
So the clue from last week was?
Well, there are cemeteries around the province, hundreds of them, in fact, many of them very well tended by volunteers or a government or a church of some kind. Unfortunately, I've seen quite a few in my travels that aren't so well tended.
Why are they not tended?
Well, you know, I think in some cases, there's just no one to tend them. There are some areas of the province that are just so sparsely populated that the people that might have done them are just gone and there's nobody to do them. But in other cases, there are other circumstances. I don't want to suggest that this is willful neglect, but I'll give you an example. My grandmother resolved that she did not want to be buried in the local cemetery. And the reason was that she just believed that the cemetery was neglected, that they weren't doing their proper job at maintaining it. So she didn't want to be buried there. Well, my dad felt that this was not right, that my grandmother really deserved to be buried in the local cemetery. He was going to do something about it. So what he did is he actually contacted as many people as he could find who were descendants of the people buried in the cemetery and said, wouldn't you like to help in maintaining this cemetery in some small way? And in fact, he was bowled over. He got so many donations of funds that in fact, they allowed them to create what they called an endowment. They basically were able to set up a fund of money that they weren't going to touch. They would only touch the interest from that money. And it turns out now there's enough money being produced that they can hire perpetual care, that my dad and my grandmother are both buried there and I think would be quite proud to say they are buried there.
What a lovely story. Mm. I love that. Okay, so there are quite a few abandoned ceremonies that you've discovered. Which ones are you going to talk about today?
So I'm going to just pick a few just as highlights for me, ones that I think have a particularly interesting story. So a friend of mine, Malcolm Bell, told me about a little cemetery that had he not told me, I would have never known about it. I was in an area that was south of Riding Mountain Park called the Oakburn area, and there was a site called Wheatfield. Now, there had been a school there, a one-room schoolhouse, but what Malcolm told me was that there had also been a church made out of logs. It was used in the early days, and by early days, I mean like the 1880s, by the local Methodists and the Baptists. And apparently, and there were a few of the parishioners that passed away, and four of them were buried in the cemetery by this little church. Well, unfortunately, the community didn't thrive, and so eventually the cemetery was deconsecrated. It was the graves were disinterred. They moved the people buried there to the cemetery in Shoal Lake, except for one. And apparently, according to Malcolm, there is still one grave there. And there's a really, I think, poignant story attached. But I think that the only way to describe it is just to tell the story that the local history book gave. So let me just read the entry. It says, a Mr. Harmer came from Cheshire, England, as a young man of 22 years. He came to the Oakburn area and with some friends went fishing at a lake in the first week of July, 1886. While lying under the wagon in the heat of the day, something stung him on the cheek below the eye. He died within 30 hours in delirium, and his remains lay buried in a grave near Wheatfield School. So somewhere near that school, and I've been there, there is nothing. You would never know. There's just a farmer's field. But somewhere there is the remains of Mr. Harmer.
Poor Mr. Harmer.
Yeah.
But is there any marker or indication of where that might be?
Nothing at all. Oh, wow. Well, you know, in some cases they would put up a marker, but the marker might be made out of wood.
Right.
So, of course, wood isn't something that endures. And so gradually over time it would decompose and then be gone. So many of the cemeteries, in fact, where graves aren't marked, it's because they were marked at one time, but with something that just hasn't stood the test of time.
Of course. I think that's the fascination with cemeteries, too, is that, you know, they hold stories mm-hmm. of history right there and then.
Absolutely.
Okay, which other cemetery did you want to tell us about?
Well, near Shellmouth, the village of Shellmouth, near the Saskatchewan border, there is a nice old, what they call pioneer cemetery. There's a cemetery in Shellmouth itself, but this is for the earlier burials that took place there. And I was actually there this past summer, and it was a remarkable cemetery. Now, it's not tended anymore, and it's got some big shrubs in it. That's usually how you can tell if they're not really tending it anymore. There's shrubs and the grass is up to your knees and so on. But it's a beautiful site. It occupies a little hill overlooking the surrounding landscape. You know, I often come back and say, you know, I've found a place where I would like to be buried if I, you know... had the chance. And that one, I think, is a highlight. But there is a cairn there that lists the names of the people who are buried somewhere in the cemetery, because not all of them have markers. And the markers that are there are kind of hidden sometimes by the vegetation that's growing up to reclaim them. But a very nice little cemetery.
How many cemeteries have you discovered, abandoned ones, in your travels?
Well, abandoned ones is hard to say, because I haven't kept a separate count of that. I've been to over 1,000 cemeteries. And there are some that stick in my mind. There's one, for example, that I can recall somewhere in the Interlake, and for the life of me, I cannot remember where exactly it was. I just have a vivid picture in my mind's eye. It was not well tended. The grass was tall. There was shrubs that were starting to grow up. There were little trees, but I can't remember where it was.
What was it about it that struck you?
Well, just because, you know, there's a sort of, and I hate to say this, but it seems almost like an implied disrespect when you let a cemetery kind of just go wild like that, you know, that you don't care much about the people that are still there. And of course, I understand that it's not always possible to maintain these things, especially if all of the relatives of the people buried there have moved elsewhere. But it just makes me sad, nevertheless, to think that people who lived and died, who may have made significant contributions to building their community, are gone and aren't remembered in any real way.
And yet here you are making some kind of effort
remember. Maybe that's the point of this episode, is to try to remind people that the cemeteries are special places and we should try as much as possible to tend them.
Tell us about another one.
Well, okay, so there's an area around Stewartburn, and it's a very remote location. I myself have never been to it because I guess I'm just not as adventurous as I should be. It's an area near a place called Sundown, and there is a single grave of a little girl by the name of Hulda Ostman. She was 2 years old when she died. Her parents were Swedish immigrants, and I suspect that they were grief-stricken, but they didn't have the means to mark her grave very well, so they just used a simple wooden marker. And it didn't last very long, so in fact, by the 1950s, some of the staff from Ducks Unlimited happened to be going by, and they saw this little grave there, and they thought, we should do better. So they actually put up a marker. Now, I can't tell from the picture I've seen whether it's a stone marker or a concrete marker, but something much more durable. So it's still there today. And in fact, in the 1980s, some of the staff from what was at that time called Manitoba Conservation found it, and they put a little fence around it. But it is a very hard place to get to. Friends of mine that have been there said that they would only recommend going there when there is a good dry period, you know, when you didn't worry about getting stuck, that you should take a four-wheel drive with lots of gas and extra parts, and like, it's pretty remote. And but, you know, so to think this little girl is laying there and, you know, mostly forgotten.
It's very sobering and heartbreaking when you see, of course, graves of children. Mm-hmm. When you are going through all these locations, and you said you've been to over 1,000 cemeteries, what's the vibe like? Do you sense something? Is it a different feeling for you?
There's a sort of a solemnity to it, yes. I always take my hat off when I go in a cemetery because I feel it's a basic sign of respect. And I'm frankly a big skeptic. I don't think of paranormal things. So I don't think of ghosts and things like that. But I just think of the people, you know, and they were all people just like me at one time who had hopes and dreams, and, you know, they had aspirations, they tried their best, they did good things, sometimes they did bad things, and I think they should remember them as much as possible and respect the contributions they made, and say one sign of doing that is to maintain these cemeteries. But you talked about children, and I think we should close with one really poignant example, I think, you know, because of course we know that there were at one time several residential schools that operated around Manitoba, and occasionally some of the students that would attend those residential schools would die. And unfortunately, in those days, they didn't think it was quite as important perhaps to reconcile the deceased child with their family. So they would sometimes just bury them on the site of the school. So in Brandon, for example, on the North Hill overlooking the city of Brandon, are the remains of the residential school that once operated there. And there are a number of graves there in the vicinity of the school building. We don't know how many, unfortunately. The records are incomplete. There's at least 11 people buried in a cemetery that's quite, unfortunately, overgrown. They were buried there between 1929 and 1957, but there was recently a graduate student from the University of Manitoba that did her thesis on that cemetery. She used ground-penetrating radar to detect sort of changes in the composition of the soil, And she says that there were many more burials there than just the ones that we know about. That there is a sort of a fence around the graveyard, but she says there's many more outside of that fence. So it's really unfortunate that that these children were not able to be reconciled with their families, and that their graves are so poorly understood.
It's tragic, but I'm very grateful that you were able to bring some of these stories to light today. So thank you so much.
You're welcome, Nadja.
Clue for next week, please.
Well, okay. So in the decade before the First World War, the various urban municipalities that eventually would combine to form Winnipeg built a variety of buildings around the city, and they gave each of them a number. So next week, we're going to talk about some of these various buildings, some of which are still in use, some of which are abandoned. We're going to talk about one that is abandoned, numbered 11.
All right, Gordon, love your clues. Thanks so much.
We'll see you then.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.